Welcome to the Know Nothing News. I'm Charlie.
I'm Jackson.
And I'm Nick. And today we will be breaking down how the three themes, conflict and compromise, industrialization, and expansionism, are relevant in the 1800s, with a special guest star appearance from the theme of personal freedoms.
Episode 1. Civil Disobedience in the Gettysburg Address.
To kick off our romantic series, let's start with one of my favorite pieces of protest against the war at hand. Civil Disobedience, written 14 years ago in 1849 by Henry David Thoreau. This essay is one of the many examples of peaceful protest against the Civil War, and inspired many people after to look at the ways of peace instead of violence when it comes to the art of protesting. Let's shoot it over to Charlie, who's on his way to Gettysburg right now, and see how he's broken down this piece of writing.
Hey guys, so out of the large amount of research I have done on this essay, I have come to a consensus that the theme of conflict and compromise is heavily apparent, and that this protest against conformity is clear evidence of the romanticism that was evolving during the time. The conflict that is heavily stressed is the many wrongdoings of the government, the Mexican-American War, slavery, and the depleting power of the common man. As a compromise, Thoreau didn't look to violence and hatred. Instead, he took a more passive approach by, one, not paying war taxes, because why pay for what you don't believe in, and two, by writing this essay on how the government is ineffective and needs to be improved and not destroyed. He breaks it down into several sections, each one compromising, through just arguments and frightening stats, to the conflict at hand.
What a magnificent essay this really is. Thank you for that, Charlie. Let's take a quote from the piece and break it down. So in the first paragraph, Thoreau states that the government itself, which is the only mode which the people have chosen to execute their will, is equally liable to be abused and perverted before the people can act through it. He says this to show the people how easily the government can change the very conscience of the nation, determine what's right and wrong, and tell what everyone needs to do, things that the individual should decide. He talks about how we are getting brainwashed to a new conformity, and that we can't conform any longer because that's what the government wants. Overall, his message of a compromise really shows that minds can be changed through peaceful protest like persuasive writing.
I full-heartedly agree. We need more of this at such a time when violence and hatred is so present.
Alright, so while we're on the topic of conflict and compromise, let's go live to Charlie in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, who is standing front row at the president's address. Charlie, how's it looking over there?
Hey guys, I'm standing out here surrounded by many people anxiously waiting for Mr. Lincoln to begin. We have news that this speech will take a more peaceful approach to the protests of the great conflict at hand. I have word that he's about to start. Here we go.
Let's hear it.
Wow, that was incredible. I get these goosebumps every time that man takes the stage.
I agree. What stood out to me was how, instead of protesting, Mr. President had a whole message of unity towards the nation as a whole. This really shows his true character and really appeals to the true character of the North. I love how he uses strong emotion and the dedication to soldiers to really get at the heart of each and every individual listening.
Yeah, I agree. What a great use of pathos to get his point across. What I really liked was how the theme of conflict and compromise was very apparent. At this time, war is a huge conflict in society. It's hurting us financially and socially, but most importantly, it's dividing the nation that we have tried so hard to build up and protect. As this raging war is the main conflict, Lincoln's compromise is a very well and thought-out address that doesn't involve violence and more death. The many compromises to this conflict of war that we have seen so far have been very ill-advised, including many deaths, financial instabilities, and even the secession of our own country. But Lincoln seems to have found another way. What do you think out there, Charlie?
I couldn't agree more. Lincoln has definitely taken the many compromises we have seen before and thrown them in the dirt with this one. He starts out by reminding us about the principle on which our country was built on, that all men are created equal. He then proceeds to offer a dedication to all these soldiers who are fighting for a cause that shouldn't even be fought over. Overall, this thanksgiving to those who have fought and this reminder of our freedoms are a true and meaningful compromise to a terrible conflict. It brings out a lot of emotion that should touch all, the North and the South.
That about sums it up. See you in the South, know-it-alls.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Know Nothing News. Today we are going to touch on the conflict and compromise theme and throw it back to the theme of personal freedom.
Sounds good. I heard a very interesting little song the other day.
What was that?
It's called Follow the Drinking Gourd. It was made by a group of African Americans during the 1850s and passed along.
I think I've heard of that before. Can we play it?
Sure, I'll play a part of it. When the sun comes up and the first whale calls, follow the drinking gourd. The old man is waiting to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. Follow the drinking gourd. For the old man is waiting to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking gourd.
I really like that. What'd you think, Charlie?
Yeah, I really liked it too. The theme of conflict and compromise really stood out to me there. The conflict involved was the oppression and slavery of African Americans by the white slaveholders. They were treated unjustly and forced to work without an option. These oppressed African Americans needed a way to fight this onslaught and were willing to do anything for their freedom.
That's true. They would do anything for a way out. The song became popular for what it stood for, which was liberation from the chains of slavery in the South. Freedom by any means was the compromise that the African Americans had come to.
The song also mentions following the drinking gourd, which is used as a metaphor for the Big Dipper. Following the path of this constellation would eventually lead north, where they could be free men and women. The conflict of slavery of the African Americans was overcome by working together with an instructional song to run away.
These enslaved men and women really had a lot of courage to run like that.
Agreed. Let's switch gears, because there's a book I really want to talk about.
A book, eh?
Not just any book. Democracy in America.
Ooh, what a powerful text. The author, Alexis de Tocqueville, took a really unique approach against the ideas of democracy in the United States.
No kidding. This guy was a firm supporter of political equality.
Oh yeah, and that was pretty rare at the time. This work is historically significant because of his ideology. He was dedicated to exposing the wrongdoings and downfalls of the democratic government and the people that abide by it.
Voting rights were really important to him as well. He believed that everyone, including women and blacks, should be given the right to vote. He supported a really unpopular view on the role of women at the time. He claims that a good government is fundamentally built on the support of women. He also speaks on the threat of a centralized government and what that would cause for the nation.
There are very prominent overarching themes of personal freedom expressed in this book. His passion for the expression of the voices of the minorities of this time period was courageous, to say the least. He spoke in favor of giving more rights to oppressed African Americans and women of that time.
Until next time, know-it-alls. I thought it would be a great idea to focus on the theme of expansionism for this episode. Do you guys have anything that comes to mind?
That is a great idea. I actually just read From Walden.
I love Henry David Thoreau's work. It really makes you think and put things into perspective. This essay takes a pretty extremist stance on what Thoreau worked towards and his thoughts on transcendentalism.
Transcendentalism? What does that even mean?
So, transcendentalism was basically a response to other romantic ideologies. It focused on the idea that your own knowledge goes beyond just your senses.
Wow, that was pretty deep. The rest of the story is pretty interesting, too. Thoreau takes us on his journey into the wilderness of Massachusetts in the mid-1800s. He explained his simple life on Walden Pond, where he lives alone.
Yep, he believed that he only needed himself to be happy, and that it's important to stop and take in the beauty of nature. He did not care for the help of others, and didn't think that his elders had any useful knowledge to offer him. This essay follows the expansion of Thoreau's ideas of transcendentalism to a wider audience.
Thoreau's work always seems to catch my attention.
I can definitely agree with that, Jackson. But how could we talk about expansion without talking about the Louisiana Purchase?
Oh, you mean the biggest real estate purchase of all time? Not to mention the best price for the land, too. It was in 1812, and the United States of America more than doubled in size with the purchase of the Louisiana Territory. The U.S. acquired approximately 827,000 square miles of land west of the Mississippi River for $15 million from the French.
Jeez, that's a steal for sure. This increase of land provided countless new opportunities for citizens of the United States. The increase of land meant for more land to farm and more resources to be procured. These resources would increase the overall wealth of the nation.
And don't forget about the working opportunities. These new opportunities in the West provided new lives for citizens looking to leave the thickly congested northern cities. The interesting part of the Louisiana Purchase was there was the argument whether the United States actually had the authority to make a purchase like that. In the end, it was decided that the power was implied in the Constitution. The physical expansion of the United States provided more opportunities for citizens with now more land.
It's too bad that this expansion would lead to the destruction of Native American tribes in the Great Plains.
Well, as they say, progress requires sacrifice.
Well put, Charlie. There was definitely a lot of sacrifice involved to manifest destiny, but in the end, it would make the U.S. stronger.
And that wraps up this episode. Peace out, know-it-alls. Welcome back, know-it-alls. For this next episode, I'd like to talk about manifest destiny and how it relates to expansionism.
Whoa. What's manifest destiny?
Manifest destiny was the belief that many Americans had that God wanted them to gain control of all the territory in North America. The Louisiana Purchase was a large part in achieving this, just as the Mexican-American War was. After the war, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was signed, forcing Mexico to give 1.2 million square miles of their country to the United States, expanding the U.S. territory even more.
It's amazing how they managed to gain so much territory in such little time.
Oh, but that's not all. The California Gold Rush played a huge part in increasing population in the new Western territories. Almost 80,000 Americans migrated to California after the first gold was found, hoping to get rich quick.
But unfortunately, the get-rich-quick scheme did not work out for everyone. Moving on, have you guys ever read the poem Because I Could Not Stop for Death by Emily Dickinson?
Of course, what a classic. But how does that relate to expansionism?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Charlie. Before it was published, many people were scared at the idea of death, because many still believed in Jonathan Edwards' sermon about how God was angry with everyone and was threatening to take our lives at any moment. Dickinson's poem expanded people's minds and gave them a new perspective on death. She explained death as a journey through old memories, leading them into eternity.
That's some beautiful poetry by Emily Dickinson. Truly amazing.
And that seems like a good place to end this episode. Until next time, know-it-alls.
For this episode, we will take a peek on how the industrialization movement really affected the lives of all. First, let's take a look at the beautiful essay, Self-Reliance, written by the king of individualism himself, Mr. Ralph Waldo Emerson. 5 years ago, in 1841, Self-Reliance was written. The transcendentalist composition opposes conformity and the up-and-coming industrial revolution. It sheds a light on how we need to stop banding together, because that's what creates social norms like industrialization.
Oh, I completely agree. I love how, even though industrialization itself isn't brought up a lot, it's being alluded to through his transcendentalist views. This essay is sort of a subliminal response to the theme of industrialization and how it's diminishing the value of the common man. He also talks about how industrialization is hurting the individual mentally. In one section, he talks about the people of these industrialized cities, calling them city dolls, alluding to the fact that they aren't accustomed to the real world and how they are all following the leader. He said that those people give up and complain the rest of their life when they don't get the job that they want, while the sturdy New Hampshire man who tries all the professions is worth 100 of those city dolls, because he is himself, and he is not conforming to the industrialized norm of society.
All of this is true, and what I love most about his essay is how he so vividly explains that industrialization has brought this fear to all who conform to it. It's brought a fear of failure, a fear of truth, and most importantly, a fear of being different. Emerson explains that being different is our gift and our nature, and that conforming to the norms, like industrialization, takes that difference and squashes it.
Oh, Jackson, so deep, but so true.
I agree. Let's now switch gears to another effect of the world-renowned industrialization movement, the Trail of Tears.
Yes. I remember the day in 1830 like the back of my hand, when Mr. Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act. Some man of the people, eh, Jackson?
Very funny, Charlie, but yes, how ironic. He was known as a man of equality, yet he relocated one of the largest populations at the time, and the people who were here way before us, the Native Americans,
with one out of every four natives dead after the long and tiresome trip to Oklahoma. I hope Mr. Jackson deeply regretted his decisions.
All right, Jackson, enough about the details. What they really want to know is how the Trail of Tears was an effect of the theme of industrialization.
Okay. So President Jackson didn't just kick the natives out for the fun of it. He actually had a reason to do it, and that reason was the up-and-coming formation of industrialization. We started out by trying to civilize the natives, teaching them the ways of our Christianity and our own social norms.
We know someone who wouldn't like that. Emerson.
Very funny, Nick. As I was saying, even though we tried to keep the natives where they were, our money-hungry businessmen had enough. They wanted the land that the natives had, and they wanted it badly. They knew that they could make a fortune off of it by industrializing the process in which cotton was sold and distributed.
So what did they do? They forced the people, who we first stole land from, to move out of their homes and travel all the way to Oklahoma on a dangerous and life-threatening journey. This journey is considered to be one of the biggest mass murders of all time, as about 4,000 natives died because of our industrialized, money-hungry motives. Overall, industrialization turned us into tunnel-visioned people who couldn't accept failure and whose motives were so money-hungry that we made many ill-advised decisions, including the deaths of those who were here way before us.
So vivid, Charlie. Well, that's it for us. Later, know-it-alls. Welcome back to the Know Nothing News. This episode we will be focusing on a poem called The Village Blacksmith by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and the conflict and compromise of the Civil War.
Yes, I think I remember reading that poem a while ago.
Charlie, Longfellow uses nostalgia to warm the hearts of those who remember what society was like before the age of industrialization began. He also writes with a romantic theme, saying that industrialization is hurting the common man. He writes in good detail about the blacksmith, helping people remember a time where the common man was more prominent in society than factories and companies.
Wow, that really says a lot about our society as a whole.
Moving into conflict and compromise, what do you guys think about the Civil War and, like, what it did to America?
The war as a whole was a huge conflict, but the way the war ended was not a very peaceful compromise. The war was mainly a disagreement about slavery and whether it should be legal or not. The South's economy depended on slavery, mainly for cotton production. The war was mainly fought in the South and left it in rubble.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that, Jackson. One of the compromises that was made in an attempt to avoid war was the Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1850. Stephen Douglas was the main advocate for the act, and he proposed the idea of popular sovereignty. So popular sovereignty was the policy that citizens of a new state could vote on whether their state was a slave state or a free state.
But hey, this policy didn't really work, right?
Righto, Charlie. Pro-slavery and anti-slavery members that migrated to Kansas started fighting for the right to own slaves. This fighting earned it the nickname Bleeding Kansas.
Thank you for tuning in to the Know Nothing News. This has been your host, Jackson.
Nick.
And Charlie.
Until next time, peace out, know-it-alls.